BagelLovers.net with the one and only MC Lars from Oakland, California. Now, how do you truly feel about still being lumped into the nerdcore hip-hop genre after all these years?
Oh, man. What a question. I think that there are some talented MCs in that subgenre, and I think that it's something that has had staying power, and I think when we tour together, like some of the other artists in the scene and I, we get a great reaction and people come out to see us. But at the same time, I like to not be pigeonholed in one subgenre. I was kind of like, you know, affiliated with that after it's kind of had occurred. And but I don't hate it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I know you've, you know, you collaborate with, like, Watsky, and, you know, I know you're cool with MC Chris and all those cats. So I was just kind of curious about that, you know. Are you able to go into detail? Keep going, man. Sorry about that.
No, I'd say it's a good question, though. That's cool you know about all that scene.
Yeah. I've been down, well, you know, MC Form a lot, all those cats, man. So are you able to go into detail within your childhood in Oakland, California, and how it shaped who you are as an MC today?
Yeah, that's a good question, man. I like growing up in the Bay Area in Oakland because it's like one of those places where you'd hear Too Short and coming out of a car, and then you'd hear like Rancid or Operation Ivy, you know, down the street, like going. Like, it's such an ethnically diverse, interesting cultural place, especially when I grew up there in the 80s and 90s. I think that as a kid, I was really into, you know, video games and comic books, and I started rapping probably like fourth grade, and I think it really shaped me, though, because, like, a lot of what I do musically is try to merge different genres, and I think growing up in a place like that kind of inspired that in me at a very young age, you know?
Right, because, California is a pretty crazy place, especially Oakland, man. Like, the fact that you grew up from there, mad respect on that, bro, for real.
Thank you.
I've heard some crazy stories, so. And
yeah, I learned a lot, and I learned about, like, what, you know, like, friendships and, like, how to trust people and, like just a lot about the world because, you know, that place, like you said, it has a lot of history and there's good areas and bad areas. And it's a very interesting part of California for sure.
And can you remember the first time you held the microphone in your hand and knew that music was your chosen path?
gosh, that's a great question. I mean, I would make videos rapping, like when I was really little, like rapping along to this Do the Bartman and Deep Deep Trouble with the Simpsons, and then I'd rewrite my own lyrics. But the first time I like rapped in front of an audience was in high school for a it was like a talent show thing, and I wrote a rap about like shouting out all the local neighborhoods and stuff, and I remember I got such a great reaction, and that would have been like when I was like 16. But just that feeling of like, oh, if you say something in this format and you take yourself seriously, even if you use humor, but you do it for real, commit to it, that's how you get a good reaction. And I think that was like a really cool moment for me. Like, the first time I didn't expect it to go as well as it did.
Yes.
So I'll never forget that.
16 years old, man. Wow. Salute to that, man.
Thanks.
Yeah. So like, was the crowd like just cheering you on, or what exactly went down?
I think I was always kind of shy in high school, and it was like we'd have these like assemblies on Friday, and there was people were reading poetry, and I came out with the track was Eminem, the beat was Eminem's I Just Don't Give a F dot dot dot, and it was and I came out to that, and I think it was like my punchlines and stuff. Like people were like, oh, this shy kid actually has a voice. And people then started recognizing me around school. And it was just like this cool feeling to go from kind of being an anonymous kid to like then having an awareness outside of just my small circle. You know what I mean? Like that, that was a something I could never come back from. And then around that time, probably like a month after, is when I caught ICP on the Clowns from Outer Space tour in 98 with Twisted, and that was the first time I saw them, and I was and seeing their show and their production, I was like, oh, so this can be like having this kind of like commitment to imagination and storytelling can have this whole other world live, you know?
Yeah, I do want to get into your Insane Clown Posse influence, but we can get on that here in a little bit, because what I really want to know for right now, if you had to choose a specific sci-fi action hero to describe your lyrical bars to a first-time listener, who would it be and why?
Sci-fi action hero. That's good. I would say Yoda, because I say things in a kind of different way. My voice is kind of like non-conventional, and I like to speak in riddles, and I like to think that there's like wisdom in my lyrics, but like when it's time to throw down or like time to rap fast, kind of like when Yoda with the lightsaber in episode 2 or episode 3, I can get down too. Like I can surprise people with my style. So that's, yeah, I would say he would be my metaphorical choice for that.
Good answer, bro. Appreciate that. Which LP of yours would you recommend to start off with for people, you know, just discovering your music? You know, maybe they were on YouTube and it randomly selected it or something, you know?
I did a mixtape in 2011 called Indie Rocket Science, and like Ritz is on there, and KRS-One and Frontalot and Chris and a lot of great rappers. But I also really like that project because it... yeah, I think it's very diverse, and it's like, I'm proud of it lyrically, and I think it ended up sounding really good, like when we mixed it and stuff. So that's always like an album I like to introduce people to, but it's not on Spotify because there's a lot of samples and uncleared stuff on there. So I recommend, like in terms of actual records, probably This Gigantic Robot Kills, which is my second album.
And can people go to your online store to find that right now? Is it still pressed up?
Yeah, that's a good question. That particular title, it's funny you bring that up. Indie Rocket Science is on my online store, and you can get it there. Robot Kills, I'm reprinting for the 10th anniversary with like bonus tracks, but the first one I mentioned is on there for sure.
Yeah, I just want to check in on that, because I know a lot of underground stuff, it's like limited quantity sometimes, and then next thing you know, I can't get it because it's sold out. So it's cool that you're repressing it. 10-year anniversary, wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's been a fast 10 years, it feels like.
And now, you already brought up Insane Clown Posse. You first seen them with Twisted in 1998. That's old school right there. So can we dive deeper into how influential Insane Clown Posse is to your career and what inspired your Hatchet Chats to begin with?
Oh, cool. That's cool. You thanks for bringing that up. Well, first of all, I appreciate you guys posting about those videos. For me, so my inroad into like the Juggalo subculture came about probably in 94 or 95, because I used to make a long story short, I had a website, like an old school website, where I would review prank call cassettes and like rare Jerky Boy stuff and like prank calls people made. And there was a sample, you know, there's that sample on Super Balls from Tunnel of Love where it's like that guy calling, he's like I'm looking for saxophone lessons, I'm only up at this time of night, I make music of the night or whatever. And that was from this tape called the Seattle Phone Pranks. And this kid in Michigan named Chris, he and I would trade like literally like cassettes through the mail, and he was like, hey, you know, this was sampled by this local group called ICP that I'm a big fan of. And, you know, in they weren't as big as they were in California in like 94, 95. And so I was like, what is this stuff? Because I really liked the imagination and the storytelling and the mythology of the Joker's cards. And so I was, that was kind of my inroad into that. And then when the Malenko stuff happened, and when it was on, when MTV did Shockumentary, then everyone started to kind of talking about them. But I always felt like I kind of like, it was like a secret underground group that I knew about. I remember the Mutilation Mix compilation was like a big, awesome, like eye-opening mix that they had had so many records, you know, for years. And one of the things that also caught my ear was the old Evil Eye on Riddlebox, how that was like a, how they were flipping that Edgar Allan Poe Telltale Heart story. And like, that's kind of what I was, you know, my first raps, I was taking like Shakespeare and literature and turning it into rap. And I liked their storytelling and their energy, and I liked how they mixed rock, and especially on that Riddlebox record and Onward, like that they were doing it, but they were doing it in their own way. And I liked that it just felt like this secret world that was endlessly interesting. And then from there, you know, I got into all the like Project Born and Isham and Misery and House of Crazies and Twisted, and all that was like, I really was interested in horrorcore because it was still so new and wasn't like popping off on the West Coast as much at that point. So it was this inroad into kind of like this hard, imaginative, creative rap. And then when I started doing the Edgar Allan Poe stuff, that I was trying to channel like that dark, wicked energy into this 19th century anti-transcendentalist literature stuff, which kind of connected with like the nerdcore community. And so, but they were through everything, like Violent J was always like my biggest rap influence. And I always, you know, owe them, seeing what they pulled off at this small club in Palo Alto in 98. I mean, that made me want to pick up a mic and grind it out and do this. And I don't talk about it a lot, but they are definitely, I've always been protective of them and tried to have their back. And when all the Saturday Night Live stuff happened, I was always like a little annoyed that people were, you know, hipster bandwagon, jumping on the bandwagon, or like kind of not taking them as seriously, because I really connected with them in a way that it's hard to describe. And I'm sure a lot of the juggalos and people who read your sites know that feeling of like wanting to protect them and wanting to also, like, I don't know, that it's so much more than music. And that is what changed my life. So very long answer, but there you go.
So pretty much, you know, seeing their history inspired the Hatchet Chats, and you just pretty much wanted to give them some shine and show people that you are a fan of their music. You don't want to hide it, that you're proud to be a fan of ICP.
The Hatchet Chat, like I am a fan, and there's a way, and what also was inspired me about the project is that, like, last year or something, I listened to every single thing they did chronologically, and I was like, there are so many different releases, and there's so many connections here and threads here, that if the idea of the project was, first of all, if I take Behind the Paint and use that, cite that as a first person reference, and then review each album like with that as the guide, that would be a very interesting long-term project that, you know, it's very niche-y, but I really enjoy doing them. I'm doing Ringmaster next, and so that's going to be a big one. Ringmaster has a lot of, like, that whole Egyptian mythology of, you know, your sins out. Can you defeat your sins when you die? And were you a better person when you died or when you were born? And I feel like that kind of the karma element of that album is big. So that's an exciting one. I'm working on that now.
And would you say that is the ensign compass that you hold dearest to your musical heart?
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, I think what I also am really, what I really like about ICP is that you're rewarded for paying attention. Like, Simpsons is kind of like that, and all my favorite art. It's like, if you really pay attention and connect the stories, you're rewarded for that. They reward you for your loyalty, because they're always like little references and shout outs through everything from the beginning, from, I guess, all the way back to Intelligence and Violence. And like, that's like, obviously this first six Joker's cards are the classics, but I've always loved what they've done post that. And I am very excited for Fred Fury. That's the next one, right?
Yes, sir.
That's going to be tight.
Yeah. Everybody's waiting on that. I'm sure they'll, show off a little bit of that at the Dark Carnival Con this November.
Ooh.
Yeah, this coming up in like this week. So Now, this is pretty interesting, I thought. Hopefully I don't mess up this cat's name. What inspired you to write Schrodinger's cat, My Sympathy the Violent J, to begin with? And, you know, are you able to dissect the track's metaphorical content?
Oh, man. Okay, well, that's a story that, I'm glad that you brought that song up. So I went to see Twisted they played New York, and I live in New York now, and I went to see them, and my fiance was, I got a package, like I got an Amazon package, and she was like, okay, it's in the lobby, I'm going to grab it when I come back. And she came back and the package was gone. And so Schrodinger's cat, you know, is this quantum mechanic theory that you don't know if a cat is alive or dead in a box because it can be both simultaneously until you like actually decipher the binary, meaning like a cat can be two things at once, but if you open the box, it will reveal what it actually is. So I was at the show and I came back and it made me think about how, I mean, I know this might be controversial, but I know that the MNE psychopathic split has, like, a lot of people are taking sides, and like, I don't know enough to make a definitive comment about it, but I did think it was interesting that they played First Day Out during the set and that a lot of people were wearing ICP clothes, and it felt like being juggalos but not being juggalos at the same time was like this Schrodinger's cat analogy. So I wanted to write the song kind of like sympathetically trying to empathize with what Jay might be going through with all of this, with all the controversy that was surrounding it at the time. And I'm not like someone to talk crap about anything. And I know it's complicated and I don't know anyone involved in the split, but I wanted to write a song about how like a fan base can have a dualistic nature, and it's kind of like quantum mechanics. And the metaphor was solidified by, I was at the show watching Twisted and the package got stolen, but it was there before. So it just felt like this really funny intersection of everything I was thinking about that day. So that verse and that song is like 32 bars trying to explain it all. And might be a bit obtuse, but it was just like a weird situation. But, you know, I'm not trying to take a side, but I do think anyone affiliated with ICP who benefited off of their success and hard work, you know, that's like worth noting. And I would say that, you know, if a band had helped me a lot and then I left them and was like not being very nice to them in their label, I wouldn't cover their songs in my set. That's all I'm going to say.
Hey, strong valid point right there. And myself, I have,
but I'm not trying. Yeah.
No, I ahead, totally feel you. I won't pick a side because, you know, I'm from Michigan and I've been down with ICP and Twisted since 2003. So like, you know, the fact that there are cats that do pick sides, I think that's obnoxious. You know, like what you like, don't try to get into the drama, you know? Music's music, and that's what it's there for.
Yeah. I wouldn't pick a side, and I was happy to go see them, and like Blaze and Boondocks, and the openers were, it was like a great show. And, I would never try to start beef, because no one really has time for that.
Exactly. Valid point.
Yeah.
Now, what do you like most about the juggalo culture as a whole?
For me, it was always like, you know, like when ICP were still pretty underground in California back in the day, it was like you'd see, I had the Malenko sticker on my old school Volvo, and it was always be like people would like wave when I drove by, or like when you see someone with the Hatchiman on their bag, you like, you say, what's up, juggalo? Like the community where you'd find friends in surprising places and always have something to talk about. And that's what I really love about nerdcore as like a culture, because it's like there's a lot of community and you can always talk about the video games or the movies or different like nerdy things. And I just think that like Jay talks about in Behind the Paint, this concept of the flubes, right? Like the flubes, the juggalos, the people who are kind of like never necessarily the coolest people at school, but there's a community of not, you can be yourself. And that's what I love about juggalo culture, is that you can be yourself and you don't have to impress anyone. And ICP has shown that you can be successful in that. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, that's that punk rock element of like being able to survive through your music, through a good show, and through your loyalty to your fans, and through perseverance too, like not giving up. And what is this? He talks about this term leyenda in Behind the Paint, that like it was all or nothing. They were all in. And I think that is what I love about Juggalo culture. Like, it's hard to be a casual Juggalo. Of course, there are people who remember Malenko and stuff who are like, haven't followed them. But like, if you're a Juggalo, like a real one, that's something you take to the, for you to the grave. And I like that. So like, yeah, so the community and the family element and the respect and the longevity of it, and the fact that like, there's so much great music by so many artists in this world, that one day when our planet is gone, it's going to be a very interesting discovery for when aliens come down and they listen to this stuff, they're going to be like, oh wow, this was like a very interesting moment in human history. And you know, I love how they have inspired me to do my own thing and not give up, and not be a, not necessarily have to be a, like winning the approval of the hip-hop culture, to mainstream hip-hop culture, to justify myself and my art. And to me, that's the dopest thing about it. And yeah, the friendships I've made through the scene too, and people like Kevin Gill, and like people who are positive, awesome people who are aligned with the culture, that kind of break that stereotype, because I hate how it gets such a bad light in the media. And I love how there are so many people out there, like so many interesting Juggalos out there, that like you can't really define it, and that's cool to me.
Yeah, that's a great in-depth answer. I really appreciate you breaking that down. I totally agree with everything that you said. I'm not just saying that either. That's a really packed a mighty punch right there. And
thanks, Chad.
Yeah, you're welcome. Your true thoughts on the FBI labeling Juggalos as a hybrid gang?
Well, I think I think one of the interesting things about the first six Joker's cards is how Jay creates this metaphor where, right, the underclass of America, the people who are not given opportunities, the people who are laughed at, who are not given opportunities through institutionalized classism and like abuse and this things in society that prevent equality. Equality and democracy through economics. Like Jay, I love how Jay and Shaggy have this metaphor that the Dark Carnival is that, right? And I think that with so much of the police state right now, and so much of our country is divided between the haves and have-nots, that institutionalized classism can take shape in many different ways. And I think like, it's just an example of how if society doesn't understand something, they're quick to label it. And I think that the whole Juggalo gang label is just like a heuristic way of trying to explain, oh, these people are weird, we don't understand them, therefore they shouldn't have the same rights as other people. You know, like a heuristic being like a quick, simple way to explain something. And I think it's very interesting, though, if you listen to those records, that like the whole idea of karma and acceptance and community and good outweighing all of that crap, that like that institutionalized crap that really separates us and kind of disempowers us. I think that the march, I really wish I could have been at the march, but I had like a family commitment that weekend. And I think that was so awesome that like it went peacefully, and they were able to take a stand, and it was trending on social media and everything. And I just hope that, like, you know, maybe one day we'll have a, I don't know, Juggalo president or something that kind of understands and like wants to take steps to wash that away, because it's really endemic of bigger problems in our country. And yeah, it's whack as heck. And I think that I'm optimistic that like that will change, and I'm always trying to follow the news. And I think that like, it's just an unfortunate thing, but I love how they've been so active about it. And I think like, it's super cool to see them in the news fighting it, you know?
Oh yeah, Washington D.C. was crazy. I was there. I witnessed it. And
were you there?
Yeah, man. And the fact I saw Ian MacKaye riding on his bike was pretty crazy. Of the, you know, the one of the first hardcore punk bands, Minor Threat, riding through his bike through there.
So he was like with every, he was there in support of it.
I think he was just witnessing it. You know, just seeing what was going on.
Yeah.
But it was still interesting that the That's fact awesome. That he was just riding his bike through there, you know. It's one of the things I didn't expect to see type of things, you know.
That's a cool story. I did. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, when Psychopathic Records invited you to perform at the Dark Carnival Games Con, Denver, Colorado, what were your first thoughts that rushed through your mind? And what are you looking forward to the most at the convention?
Man, that was probably like one of the best days of my life. Like, Kevin hit me up, or no, Scotty B hit me up, like, hey, Jump Study's trying to get in touch with you. I'm like, what? And Kevin's like, yeah, what's your number? Like, Kevin Gill was like, can I pass on your number? So I gave Jump Study my number, and we talked on the phone for, gosh, maybe 20 minutes. And, like, you know, I'm such a fan of his records and, like, The Road and The Master Flying Guillotine and all of his stuff, like Chaos Theory. So I wanted to ask him about all of that right away. But I was trying to play it real cool. And I think he's an interesting, his art is interesting because he's kind of like that bridge between nerdcore and the Juggalo culture with all the, like, the intros on his records and like his participation in the gaming world. So it was just real cool to talk to him and like, hear that he said, what did he say? He said, Rob said, you know, Lars, we've been hearing about you for mad years. Like, Juggalos have been telling us about you and that you're cool. And we thought that, like, it's time to give you a shot to see, like, if you can, you can entertain the fans and see if the Juggalos like you. And here's the show. And you'd be second of however many on the day ICP plays. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is a dream come true. Because, you know, I've done a lot of festivals and toured around the world, but to get that, just to be talking to some, like, to him, and to feel like co-signed by Psychopathic as a artist that they want to have perform, like, co-signed in that, like, they endorsed me enough to, you know, put me on the flyer and tweet about me and stuff. Like, it's like, that's better than any Grammy or any other you know what I mean, any other accolade, just to like say I was there. And I would be so excited to meet Shaggy and Jay if they're there, if I get the chance to. And I think it's also really cool because it's like the gaming nerd culture meets hip-hop is like so much of what my whole world is about. So I'm like happy, excited to bring fans of mine who maybe wouldn't go if I weren't playing, like to add my scene in the mix. So yeah, it's like really, really looking forward to it. And today I was talking to my DJ friend about the set and, you know, starting to get that together and figure out what songs will work, but realizing that not having to change the set, like I'm not going to try to pander in any way. Like I just do me and like have fun and be relaxed and get rowdy. And, you know, it's just like, gosh, it's a dream come true, man. Like if I were to go back in time and tell my 16-year-old self that one day I'd be invited to an event like this, it would like make all the hardships worth it. It would make everything worth it. So it's a really big deal for me. And I try to play it cool online, but like I'm like honestly freaking out because I'm so excited.
Well, that's the magical thing about music. You never know where it's going to take you. And the fact that you're still doing it after all these years is impressive. And, you know, you're going to fit in, man, because Froggy Fresh is going to be there. And I know he has a little bit of your style up in that, too, so.
Yeah, we're homies. I opened for him last summer, and we're homies. That's, like, I saw how he got a lot of love at the gathering and stuff. So that's cool, like, to see that Juggalos have a sense of humor about, like, weird rap like that. So, yeah. That's cool.
Now, this is pretty cool, man. This November, you're going to be touring with I Fight Dragons on the, you know, the Future Tourorama. You know, it's a playoff Futurama.
Yeah.
So, how did that tour come about together? You know, how long have you guys been friends? I know they're on, like, the punkish synthesized side of music.
So, yeah, we met through Warped Tour in 2012. My manager at the time was also managing them, and they had seen one of my videos. So we did a run that in the fall of 2012, and we kind of like, it's really cool because they're, you know, yeah, their style is like that punk synth kind of chiptune style with kind of like smart, interesting lyrics. And then we did Brian from I Fight Dragons sang on my last record, and we were trying to do something last year, but didn't work out for some reason. So we were like, let's just do 2 weeks of shows and see how it goes. And so that is going to be November, and I'm really looking forward to touring with them again and doing something a little different. And it's so fun to be like between all these different scenes, you know. It's awesome.
Yeah, so the fact is you named it after Futurama, so obviously Matt Groening is an influence of yours. How influential is he in regards to inspiring your creativity, the creator of The Simpsons?
Oh, man. Well, I've always loved Matt Groening since the beginning, and I loved Life in Hell, which is his, you know, his comic strip that The Simpsons characters are kind of based on, the rabbits that... funny, like the rabbits that kind of ended up morphing into the Simpsons. And then, Simpsons is such a cultural touchstone for me because I just learned so much about history and literature. And, you know, one of my first raps was The Raven by Poe, of Take on the Raven by Poe. And, you know, I learned about that from the first Halloween special where Bart is the Raven. So Simpsons are super influential. Futurama is super influential. And I have a song on my last record about, it's called The Ballad of Hans Molman. It's like a song about him and how he never gives up, and we made a video for that. And yeah, I want to do like a whole Simpsons theme album one day, because that's very important to me. And I love all of Matt Groening's work. I've never gotten to meet him, but one time we were at Comic-Con and he was signing autographs, and I was like a few feet away from him, and that was awesome.
Well, hopefully, you know, the Simpson catches Matt Groening's attention, and maybe you can do like a little, you know, guest star. You know how they do the parody of the people who guest star themselves. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
When can MCLR's fans expect another full-length LP?
Ooh, that's a great question. I just did an album with my friend Megaran, who's, do you know Megaran?
I don't think so.
He does a lot of gaming. Yeah, he does a lot of gaming and wrestling rap, and he's awesome. And he's from Philadelphia. I recommend anyone who hasn't heard of him to check him out. But we did an album that's all songs about books and poems, and that will come out this fall.
Okay, dope. Yeah. So, what album would you recommend from him, man? Because, like, I think I've seen the name. I just, you know, I'm familiar with, like, MC Hawkins and, like, there's so many other cats. I'm just kind of trying to think here.
Yeah.
Definitely MC Front a lot. I know him a lot. But familiar with him.
I think Megaran, his last full-length he did is called RNDM. So it's, like, random, but without the vowels, you know, like RNDM. And that's a great record because it's very, like, about his life, and it's nerdy, but it's also, like, very personal and political. And he is one of the greatest rappers I feel like I've ever gotten to work with and tour with. And he's a great friend, and our styles are different, but we both love books, and we both love nerdy topics. And he's such a thrill to tour with that guy because he's, like, a very deep, talented person. So, yeah, anyone out there who's interested in, like, new, interesting, smart rap, check him out. He and I are both on Patreon, like, separately. Like, we put out music every month on Patreon, and he has a lot of great stuff on Spotify. But yeah, RNDM is a good start. And then he has a bunch of albums about Mega Man, and did one about Final Fantasy, and he's so prolific. That dude puts out like 3 or 4 records a year, and everything he does is awesome. So he is dope. I love touring with him, and I wanted, like, in the years to come, do more projects with him. And because he kind of bridges the nerdcore world, but he's also, like, does so much beyond that, and he's really good to his fans. And That's all. I could talk about him all day, but
I was just a little bit curious because, like, you know, Jesse Dangerously and Dual Core and like
Jesse, yeah.
Yeah, all these names are finally starting to pop in my head. So Optimus Rhyme, yeah. Yeah,
it's
so
deep, what, man, that, and we're all like the first generation, I guess.
Yeah, that's dope, you know. And so let's talk about this Mega Ran album between you two a little bit more, if you want.
We did 13 songs, I think. Like we have song, it's all, each song is about a book or a poem or story we like. We wrote like 20 songs, and he came and stayed with me in New York before this tour we did, and we just hit the studio. And it's called the Dewey Decimal System, like, because, you know, like the libraries, they classify books Dewey Decimal, like a period, so we call it Dewey Decibel, like volume, Dewey Decibel System. And there's some guests on there, we're still getting the final mixes, but we did like we did some Shakespeare, some more Poe, some Kafka. We did a Ready Player One song that we wrote years before the movie came out, just because we love that book. And it's all, yeah, it's just like, we call it lit hop, you know, like hip hop about literature. So it's a lit hop. My first full collab with another artist that's purely lit hop references. And we make a joke on stage that there's Run the Jewels, but we would refer to ourselves as like Run the Schools, because it's educational. You know?
That's classic, man.
Thanks, man.
So being that you're like a big Edgar Allan Poe fan, what do you got to say to all the people who's ever said that Edgar Allan Poe is overrated?
Well, I think he's everywhere. He's omnipresent. And I think that, you know, he's like, every time there's a Poe meme, I'm tagged on Facebook and Twitter a million times, you know, because people know that I love him. And I get he can be a little bit overwhelming, just like the whole imagery of like the sad guy with the bird on his shoulder. But I'll tell you this about Edgar Allan Poe, like of all the 19th century anti-transcendentalist American romantics, he stood out from people like Whitman and Thoreau in that while they were looking at like America as this infinite, joyful, ever expanding manifest destiny reality, he was like, okay, well, there's a dark side to all this. There's a dark side to slavery. There's a dark side to, you know, racism. There's a dark side to life. There's a dark side to love. And the dude was like, you know, he had a problem with drinking. His mom died when he was young. His wife died like when she was young, and he never really was a truly happy person, but he found relief in his imagination and in his storytelling. And I think of all the writers, Poe really believed in the magic of sound and rhythm. And he was a very technical writer, so he wrote things to be like read aloud. And I think that so many other authors of his period didn't focus on the oral tradition as much. And that's why, like, The Raven, like, Once Upon a Midnight Dreary, While I Pondered Weak and Weary, like, his flow of all his poetry is timeless. And I think it could be seen as overrated, but I prefer to see him as kind of timeless. And there's some really dark, crazy stuff in his short stories too. Like, one of the craziest stories is this story about this dude who, he's basically sleepwalks, and he's obsessed with his cousin because he's sick and she's really nice to him, but she has these like beautifully perfect teeth. And so one night she's in a coma and they bury her on accident because they think that she is dead, but she's not. So somehow he knows to dig her up. He digs her up in the middle of the night in like a sleepwalking state, and he takes pliers and rips out all her teeth and puts them in this jar by his bed. And he wakes up to hear her screaming and see the teeth like by his bed in a jar. And I think that's like one of the creepiest, most imaginative, weirdest stories I've ever read. And like, it's, you know, that like there's, you can draw a lot of connections between him and horrorcore, and that it's the imagination and the storytelling. And the close attention he paid to how words sound. And I think for that reason, he's like the greatest of all time horror story writer and poet. And some of his more mainstream stuff is a little like corny and played out, but like there's some, like that story I told you, it's called Berenice. It's just so twisted and dark, and like the dude had issues. And to me, that's interesting. He channeled all his darkness and pain and disillusionment into his incredible imagination. And I'm always like discovering more Poe stuff. And yeah, he's the gift that keeps on giving, man. It's just, he's such a creepy dude, but so brilliant, you know?
I agree. And for the record, I don't think he is overrated. In my opinion, he's a little bit underrated. I know he's like influenced a lot of people, but the fact is, you know, someone that can write stuff that dark back then is just like insane, dude. You know?
Yeah, and he, you know, and he also invented the mystery genre too, like before Sherlock Holmes. Like, he created stories about these detectives trying to solve a mystery, and it turns out like it's some unexpected thing. And he also was one of the first people to really dabble in science fiction. He has a story about a guy who, his only novel is about a guy who is on this boat and enters this strange world on the other side of, like, inside the planet Earth. Like, as a creator of form and the literary canon, he really pushed boundaries. And I think he's, yeah, interesting guy. So that's cool. I'm glad you appreciate him.
Yeah, yeah, I'm an H.P. Lovecraft fan too, so just throwing it out there.
Oh, shoot.
Yep, yep. What would you
say? Yeah, Lovecraft is great too. I want to do a Lovecraft album, and I think problem with Lovecraft though is like I can't get down with some of his, you know, some of his racist language. Like, I know it was of the time, but like there's like some of his, you know, you read some of his stories and it's like he's brilliant, but I also, yes, some stories you don't want to.
Yeah, I totally feel you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Being that he grew up in the 19th century, I get that. And that's the thing about it. It's kind of like, it's a bittersweet thing. Like, I like his work, but then you see some of that stuff, and it's like, I can't be down with that. But, like, The Rats in the Walls is, like, some crazy shit, dude. You know?
That's a great story, yeah. Or all the Cthulhu stuff is just like, where did he come up with this?
Right, right. Well, I'm glad we can agree on that. And, you know, what would you say is your greatest accomplishment thus far, and what do you hope to accomplish in the next 10 years?
I would say if I go back and take, like, a macro lens, I'd say my greatest accomplishment is the fact that I've been able to make a living off of my music since 2003, really. I guess since 2005 when I started touring full time. Like, just to be able to, that I was able to do this without ever having an actual, being signed to a label or especially a major label, or, you know, never really having a big budget. Like, just being able to do everything through touring and through crowdfunding and through not stopping. To me, that is like crazy to me. Like, no matter what happens, I'm just so thankful that I could do this for 15 years. And, I would say the friendships I've made over the years and through artists, or, you know, friends with some of my fans, and like, well, all my fans I consider friends, but like some of them, like two of my friends that I met, in England years ago are actually coming to my wedding, who are like fans that are very close to me. And, so that, like, yeah, that 15 years of doing exactly what I wanted. But as for the next 10 years, I'm working on a TV project that we are, like, starting to see motion with, and I can't talk too much about it, but it's been, like, an awesome year for progress with that. And, you know, I look forward to touring, but also, like, building a family life and finding a balance between being on the road and being home. And just being, you know, finding that joy in music and always wanting to write lyrics and perform and doing it for myself and not for someone else. Like, that has always been the journey. So, yeah, and also inspiring other people. When I meet young artists who are, like, openers or just getting started, it's just really cool to see that passion, inspiration that, you know, people like Shaggy and Jay passed on to me and inspired me to do it myself. And that you don't need the approval of mainstream culture to make a splash. If it's meaningful to you, then it's important. And that's like the theme of how I try to live my life. And if I can spread that message in the next 10 years to even like a small group of people, that's like life is worthwhile. That's a well-lived life, I think.
There we go. And any final shout-outs you'd like to do before ending this interview?
Yeah, let's see. I want to give a shout to Kevin Gill for helping connect me with Faygo Lovers and with Jump Steady, and a shout out to Jump Steady for, or you know, Rob Bruce for like the invitation, and of course shout out to all the, well, Scotty D of course for his support too, and shout out to you, Chad, and shout out to all the people who've been watching my Hatchet Chat web series, and I'm going to have more coming more frequently. So if you go on YouTube, check out MC Lars, and then hit that, smash that subscribe button, and you won't be disappointed.
Oh, yeah, especially that Zelda rap, Triforce. Check that out. Very original track.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, dude.
One of my personal favorites. And the Lars Attacks album is one of my personal favorites. But you know, obviously you've got a lot of work behind you in your catalog, so I will keep digging and digging more.